Welcome to Conservative Patriot Nation, new members and returning members. Tonight we are bringing you a fantastic show with two awesome, fantastic ladies. And I tell you, if you have never watched The Dangerous Dames, you definitely need to, I'm talking about, you definitely need to check out that show. Like, I'm a delivery driver, so like I'm listening to podcasts while I'm delivering. I'm in and out of the truck, and I listen to The Dangerous Dames all the time. I mean, they are really talking about current events. They go down rabbit holes. They talk about conspiracies, which I'm a conspiracy theorist, and we're starting to learn that those conspiracies are now becoming true. So tonight's going to be fantastic. If you're not following them, follow them on Telegram, Courtenay Turner. That's CURTANEY Turner. And Dr. Lee Merritt, we have shared both of their links on the wall, their websites. Go check them out. They have a lot of great content. Before we start the show, I'd like to recognize one of our sponsors, Mike Lindell, a guy that's really been fighting a good fight, a guy that's being counted for in this fight, a guy that's really exposing what many Americans have not really noticed has been going on in our country with the elections. And I tell you, this guy is fighting really hard. He's been fighting in multiple states. I know he's fighting hard in Wisconsin. And I tell you, Mike Lindell is what you consider a real patriot. And if you go to MyPillow.com, use promo code CPNN, you can get up to 80% off your purchase. And I tell you, Mike Lindell is not a guy that is just taking blessings and enjoying those blessings. This is a guy that's investing a lot of his own money into the fight for all Americans. So go to MyPillow, check out the products. I tell you, the products are great. I really enjoy it, and I know you enjoy it. And now with that, and further ado, I'd like to introduce Courtenay Turner and Dr. Lee Merritt, the Dangerous Dames, on Conservative Patriot Nation Network.
Thanks for having us.
Dr. Lee. Oh, go ahead, Courtney. I'm sorry.
Oh, I just said thanks for having us. I unmuted myself. Took me a minute.
I'm so excited to have you ladies. Like, you guys, the shows you guys knock out is just, oh my God, it's unbelievable. And you guys are great together on The Dangerous Dames. And you guys go down rabbit holes. Like, when you guys are, what show was that? You guys are talking about the Skull and Keys, and I'm like, wait, Skull and Keys is Dr. Lee Merritt and Courtenay nuts? I never heard of this before. Does she mean Skull and Bones? And then after that show, Scrolling I went to Google and I'm like, holy crap.
Well, and yeah. I found that we were talking about that, and I can't remember why we were getting into it, except that when you start looking at the false reality we're in, you can go through, the science gets complicated, but not the people. It seems like there are these people that are like the Sicilian mob would call them made men. These are not normal people. I mean, what is the chance that somebody is a member of the Scroll and Key Society, which is the big dogs at Yale? This is not the Skull and Bones. That's for the lesser lights like George Bush and John Kerry. This is the big guys that with big money. And so what's the chance that that person just happens to get the Nobel laureate for the one paper that just happens to support the notion of viruses? Without him, without that, we wouldn't be talking about viruses. So I really think that they put people into places that, and that's what Courtney and I've talked about, is that that they're guiding us through this narrative, and they get these people plugged in. You know, Einstein might be one of these people, by the way. That'll burst a lot of bubbles.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Scroll and Key is definitely there are three sister secret societies out of Yale. So it's Skull and Bones, which most people have heard of, Scroll and Key, and then Wolf's Head. And as Dr. Lee said, the Scroll and Key are the wealthiest, typically. I mean, there's, you know, outliers, but typically they're known to be the wealthiest of the three.
So do we know about Wolf's Head, Courtney? I never really looked, because I was looking about this John F. Denders, but do you know anything about Wolf's Head? Did you look to see what that one was?
I don't know too much. That is on my list to do some further investigation. I wasn't, the way I even became introduced, I know you had looked into John Franklin Enders, and he was a Scroll and Key member. But Anthony Sutton talks about it a lot in his book. You know, obviously he outlines the Order of Skull and Bones, so he's really going through mostly Skull and Bones. And I just got his other Skull and Bones book. That one is I haven't read it yet, but I heard that he had all these notes he was working on, and he mentioned in his the Order of Skull and Bones book. So he has two. He's got one called The Order of Skull and Bones, and then the other one, The Skull and Bones Secret Establishment. And in The Order of Skull and Bones, I was most looking into it because I was doing research on how the Order controls education. He's got a whole section in there on that. But in there, he talks about all of these different connections to the Illuminati. And he was saying that really he thinks that further research needs to be done to show that there's a direct connection. But he does outline several individuals and their direct ties, and it does look like the agendas and the worldviews are very similar. So
Know, and it goes along with what we see in the world today. That, and I think they're also at Harvard, if I'm right. I could be wrong, but it seems like these, we always hear about Yale and the Skull and Bones, but I think the Scroll and Key Society is in other places as well. I could be wrong about that, but nevertheless, there seems to be a pattern of the people that were involved, like in the pandemic of 1918, this that we think of as the Illuminati scions. It's Harvard, Yale, and sometimes Johns Hopkins, and sometimes Stanford. It's Harvard and Yale, always Harvard and Yale. I'm sorry. It's like the same institutions. And that's not to say everybody that goes to those institutions is Illuminati or corrupt or evil, but it's just that their people come out of those places. And that's why when people were trying to sell me on Vivek Ramaswamy, I said, okay, wait a minute. How many years, how many decades or centuries are you going to have to keep voting for people from Harvard or Yale and then wonder why you get the government you get?
Right.
You know, they're all, yeah.
Johns Hopkins has a direct tie to Skull Bones also, just because of Daniel Coit Gilman. Daniel Coit Gilman was the one who was tasked with setting up the Russell Trust. And the Russell Trust is what became Skull and Bones. It was essentially Skull and Bones, but it was
That's interesting. So that's another line, because Johns Hopkins also plays a role in the pandemic now and the pandemic of 1918, neither of which were really pandemics. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, in the 1918, in this one, they ran Event 201 at Johns Hopkins. Gates and all these people are there. But in 1918, the guy that was the son of Frederick Gates, who was Rockefeller's right-hand man, John D. Rockefeller's right-hand man, he's the guy that got a medical degree from Johns Hopkins. And his first job in World War I as a lieutenant in the Army, trust me, you don't get these jobs when you're a new, just out of your medical school ensign internship. I got sent overseas. His first job was he got to be an assistant and a researcher at the Rockefeller Institute. And he's the guy that took the vaccines that they were, these crude vaccines they were creating. First time they mandated vaccines on military down to Fort Riley, Kansas, that's precipitated the pandemic of 1918, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, the Rockefeller,
so it's always Johns Hopkins is involved in a lot of things, I think, that we probably don't know about, but.
Yeah, definitely. Well, they definitely have a direct connection to Skull and Bones and definitely to the infrastructure of the education system. And of course, a lot of that came out of Rockefeller as well. Rockefeller and Carnegie. So they partnered up together to take over the education system in the United States. And Carnegie had several, he believed in something called the gospel of wealth. And this is essentially the very, like the early predecessor to today's effective altruism movement. Sam Bankman-Fried, who recently went to jail. He was one of the, heads of this effective altruism, or kind of anointed ones to effective altruism movement. But the earlier iteration of the effective altruism movement was this gospel of wealth idea that Carnegie had, that, you know, the elite, quote unquote, the wealthy ones should be philanthropic. And, in Australia, when you look up philanthropy, they actually say like embezzlement, money laundering. And
that's the religion of wealth. That's the gospel of wealth, is money laundering. And
Yeah. And so, but his philosophy, I know it was hilarious, but his philosophy was that, you know, of course they should be, and it was a very elitist mindset because he believed that it was those people, the wealthy, who should be, it's not only they should be generous with their money, but that they were the ones who, you know, were, it's kind of similar to this, like the philosopher king notion, you know, that they knew more than everybody else. And so therefore they were going to be the best, stewards of that money and know best how to allocate it. And so he had this whole, philosophy. And of course, he and Rockefeller teamed up on many things, but definitely on the institution of education. And the whole principle behind it was to create this internationalist, education system. It was, you know, the, that we now see this out of things like UNESCO, but they were really early on talking about how they were going to use education in order to breed mindless, obedient soldiers and to put every child into a computer system. And the Carnegie Foundation had a document called Conclusions and Recommendations, and this was the genesis of Common Core, otherwise known as Communist Core. But yeah.
And they've been wildly successful. I mean, really beyond what people, yeah, I wouldn't have predicted this could have happened this quickly, but they've really taken over education in my lifetime, I would say. I mean, they started the Prussian model before that, but it wasn't so bad. In the 50s and 60s, we still actually had, I thought, a decent education, but
Because they're masters of incrementalism, right? This is the Fabian socialist model. So the Fabian socialist mascot is the tortoise. For the incrementalism, it's slow and steady wins the race, but their coat of arms is the wolf in sheep's clothing. And this represents, you know, I think kind of a nod to the dialectical method that they use.
Well, and you know what? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say real quick, what's interesting as you ladies were talking is something that popped in my mind here is, you know, look over here, don't look over there type of thing where there's no one talking about Skull and Keys. And I forgot listening to, and they say you have the front guys like Bill Gates, Zuckerberg, and the well-known people. Those aren't the people that's really in power. And it's funny that you guys brought that up because everyone talks about the Freemasons, Skull and Bones, but no one talks about those other names that no one talks about. So that's just something that popped in my mind.
Well, that's exactly the point, is that they push somebody out there and they make them real showy. And, you know, like Bill Gates, okay, or Klaus Schwab is the good example here. They push Klaus Schwab out there, and he's just, he's a Bond character. Come on, he's a caricature of a Bond character. He's got to be, I mean, he's a real guy, but he's really made up somehow. I mean, he's got to be playing a role. He can't really be like this. But anyway, he just looks and sounds like a Bond character. And then when you're not paying enough attention to him, what do? They show you a picture of him on a beach with this see-through, you know, skimpy negligee and women's silky opera gloves. I mean, it's so disgusting. It will just want to rip your eyes out, but it gets your attention. And at the same time, who you're not hearing about is how many people know who Pepe Orsini is. Mm-hmm. You know, Pepe Orsini is much more dangerous than Klaus Schwab, but we never hear his name. Pepe Orsini is the senior member of the House of Orsini, direct descendant from Julius Caesar, and the head guy of the black nobility, probably the great pope. So that guy is really in charge of a lot, and you never hear his name. No. And it's that's what I think. And I think for a lot of years, quite frankly, by the way, well, let me say, I think for a lot of years, we paid a lot more attention to the royalty of England than we ever did to the Rockefeller, Rothschild.
Right.
Rothschild banking house, for example. But then there was a picture a few years ago. It wasn't Jacob Rothschild. I think it was Evelyn Rothschild. It was one of the Rothschild guys. Anyway, and it showed them a picture, and he was giving Prince Charles at that time the 3,000 PSI finger. You could tell who was in charge. It wasn't Charles. It was the Rothschild, whichever one it was. And I just remember that picture thinking, wow, this tells you the real pecking order here. Oh, and by the way, per a conversation we had, Courtney, is that this is what we do, by the way, on Dangerous Dames. We just go back and forth on all sorts of stuff and get lost. But Rockefeller actually is a Rothschild by his mother. He actually is a family. They're all family. That's the other thing. They are all family members. People don't want to think of this as, you know, a worldwide mafia. But I'm just going to tell you, This is a family. And this family, whoever, whatever, wherever they came from, whatever they really are, you know, look at the look at the elongated skulls in Mexico and then look at Jacob Rothschild's skull.
Right.
I mean, I'm not sure these guys are human, but whatever they are, they're all related. And that is, you know, when we think of the Sicilian mafia, not everybody can join. You have to be bloodline. And this is just a bigger version of that. We always thought the Sicilian mafia were the big guys on the block. They work for these guys. And so, yeah, it's really very interesting to watch they're all connected. In fact, my understanding is the CCP in China is really actually run, or up until recently, I think we're winning. I don't think these guys are quite there yet the way they were. But the CCP in China, who was their deep state, was run by the children of John D. Rockefeller.
Well, you know, I mean, Mao was trained by Yale. It was part of the Yale in China program.
And why am I not surprised?
Yeah. They like to paint him out as being this country bumpkin, and he was really poor.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But he was trained by, and he may have been, but he was definitely co-opted because he was part of this Yale in China program. And so I'm sure Skull and Bones was conditioning him and training him. Yeah, there's a whole article.
He's very charismatic. You know, I mean, he, you know, they always pick somebody that really they can push out there, and you pay attention to him and you don't pay attention to other people necessarily.
Well, I think MK Ultra studies teach us a lot about this, you know, that they use a dark triad personalities. I think they during those studies, they actually figured out how they could exacerbate and create dark triad psychopathy. And I think that then they use that in order to manipulate people. They create assets and then they weaponize them.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and that's why I'm going to say whoever Einstein was. Now, I'm not saying he wasn't a smart dude, and he got credit for a lot of stuff. But really, when you look back, what Einstein did essentially was derail our path to free energy. And, you know, and so, and look at him. I mean, again,
well,
got the hair and the famous tongue. He's always getting these photo ops. He's just being pushed out by the media. And
yeah, I think he was the Joe Biden and Nikola Tesla was the Trump.
Well, maybe, but you know, I'm not even sure who Tesla was, Tesla was basically thinking along. It was Maxwell's equations that got mistranslated by a couple guys, Hertz, and I'm blanking on the other guy's name, also starts with an H. And they mistranslated to simplify the equations. They got rid of these quaternions that Maxwell had put in there. And that's what changed our belief in physics and how physics works in the world. And quite frankly, I always tell people I shouldn't have been studying biology for medicine. It really is more physics. If you really get into it, we're electromagnetic beings. It's all physics. You know, how do things poison you? Well, because they steal electrons. Sometimes it's actually a physical chemistry thing like binding into a site, but ultimately it deranges the three-dimensional shape and your energy production. And it's really very, physics in nature. So I think Einstein was really they got their money's worth out of that guy.
I think so too. I haven't heard the theory yet, but I have a friend who's saying that he thinks that Tesla was a bad operator too. And I find that very disappointing. So I'm hoping he's wrong.
I find that a little hard to believe. Although he's the guy that probably took out Tunguska, but I think it was an accident. I mean, he was trying, this is the scalar wave technology.
Mm-hmm,
and
right.
He was trying his so-called death ray that he was coming up with. And he was, if you look where his lab was and you look where Tunguska was, he claimed he was going to use his ray to try and melt ice in the Arctic. Well, oops, he missed a little bit, got a little bit too south, and it took out this big circle, laid this, you know, in fact, I think I have a picture of this on my website on the front page on my pandemic of 1918. I talk about I think it's in that, maybe it's in a different article, but I think it's in that one where I talk about electromagnetics and how it plays into disease, but also this that you can project things at a distance, project damage. Right. and why it has to do with the concept of also how you can project disease electromagnetically, but I think it's in there. But anyway, it's a perfectly round circle. All the trees got flattened. Only a couple people died because it's in Siberia in a remote area, but I think it killed an elk herd or something. But it was like they want to say it's a comet. Again, you know, one of the ways to discern who's telling the truth is just look to see if the government is officially lying about it. If they are, then something's not right here. And they kind of said, oh, this is a comet. Well, it's not a comet. Comets make three-dimensional dents in the ground as they hit, right? This is completely flat. It's just the trees are flattened over. So pretty weird.
Yeah, for sure. Like
the Philadelphia Project.
Yeah, now I think he was actually involved in that, either directly or indirectly. His. I think he was because it does. I don't know. Here's a question to you. Do you think we'll get Mike on the hook here? Do you think that that we're doing any time travel, time distortion?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, I do too. I'll tell you in favor of that. In fact, I feel vindicated because Carrie Made came back, or she's coming back from Israel. She's still over there. But she said, all that stuff that Lee's been putting on the telegram, I've talked to people over here. It's actually true. There's a war in the tunnels. So, and it's not Hamas. It's just not just Hamas, but it's something else. And so she said, I've met people that are involved in tunnel warfare, subterranean warfare.
Oh, I've heard that one too.
Yeah, I do think, but. Let's see, what were you just, I got myself lost there. I said something. The time thing in South Dakota. I don't know if you saw these pictures. Azazel News has some great stuff, but anyway, they had a picture of the sky being green. Okay. And these people in South Dakota, these are people taking their own little photo shots with their phone and some more professional pictures. So it's not just once. This is multiple times we've seen this really green sky, not like the aurora borealis, not like just a little bit green after a weird storm. We have that in Iowa sometimes, but this was like vivid green. And what it turns out now, it actually just came out that this, it's in official scientific news. I can't remember what news it was, a science journal I read this in, that they have installed for testing a dark matter to something to catch dark matter, a dark matter accumulator under deep underground somewhere in South Dakota. Yeah. It's like,
I know where it's at, Dr. Lee.
Do you?
I think so. No. Yes. That was South Dakota, by Deadwood, right? That's South Dakota, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know yes. Where it is. But
I have pictures. I was at this place. Now this might be the location. Because it's crazy that you just brought this up. My aunt and my uncle, whenever we go on vacation, we're doing historical trips.
Neat.
And we went to an old mining place, and they said that cut was 8,000, roughly around 8,000 feet below. And we were reading the different things that they had there at this facility, and they talked about dark matter.
Oh, wow.
This is mind blowing right now. I'm sorry.
Well, and so the story goes that you harvest dark matter to do time jumping, to somehow put people into the future or past. I don't know how it works, but that, and they harvest dark matter and then they'll draw a line. They show you a jump line. I just see this on Azazel News. Maybe it's someplace else, but it goes along with what we're seeing in that the, you know, CERN is, what do you think, hey, this, and this brings us to the real question, is we had talked about on the Dangerous James the other day, what do you think is going to happen on April 8th? CERN is churning up. Why are they doing this? And Carrie says there's a lot of stuff happening over in Jerusalem. It's the idea that they're trying to open portals. And that's also part of this dark matter thing, I think.
That's what they're trying to do. It seems to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. That's mind blowing, and I would definitely send that over because I took pictures because they talked about going 8,000 feet below. They were talking about dark matter, and my mind was blown. And they talked about life, other life, and I'm like, wow, wait a minute. This is crazy. Like, they're throwing red pills out here. And I was telling Anne, I'm like,
Oh,
I
wait,
can't
who told
believe
you about
this.
other life? You mean other species
Right.
living underneath?
Yeah, it said
And who
something
told you
about
that?
this is at a facility where, okay, so there's a really big hole cut out of the earth, and it goes about roughly around 8,000 feet below. And this write-up, what they discovered, the miners down there, was something with dark matter and life. And I'm like, wait, what?
Now, they
Holy
didn't
cow, I
mention
can't.
black goo, did they? That's another
You know what?
different stuff, but
I don't think I saw that, but they did
okay.
talk about the dark matter.
Huh. Well, that's apparently then the what they're and that's so they're trying to capture that somehow. You know, and it's supposed to be dark matter is supposed to be the most prominent energy in it's everywhere. It's supposed to be the most prevalent energy in the universe, but we can't measure it, see it, taste it, touch it. No, we don't know what to do with it, I guess, or at least the little people like us don't know what to do with it. But somebody out there is doing things with it that we just don't understand. And
I think the ancient people probably knew.
yeah, probably did somehow. And oh, here it is. Let me just stop the noise here. It showed that it's called the Lux Zeppelin Dark Matter. Let me just back this up a little bit. It's the Lux Zeppelin Dark Matter Detection thing, and it was from Sanford Underground Research Facility. So Sanford, you know, that's the big medical system up in South Dakota, Sanford system. So I'm wondering if it tells me where it is. Yeah, I don't see. Oh, maybe no, that doesn't tell you where it is. The long search for dark matter. It says it's received its first result. So it's been out there for a while. The long search for dark matter, estimated to comprise 85% of all mass in the universe, took a major step forward with the underground Lux Zeppelin experiment in South Dakota, now delivering initial results. So there you go.
Wow, that's
Led,
amazing that you brought
so
that up.
it's leader led South Dakota is where it is. LEAD, South Dakota, wherever that is.
Yeah, I don't
I
know.
will definitely get the name of this facility and let you know. I know it's in Deadwood. Because my uncle's like, oh,
Well,
you gotta see, they cut this big hole in the earth and blah blah blah. And so then they got like a little museum type of thing showing about how what the miners did, what they found, and all this good stuff. And what was really, really amazing, there was a little television on the wall where you can listen to this. He was a Lakota Indian, talking about there was a Lakota Indian. Her name was Red Cheekbone, I believe it was Red Cheekbone. And how all the Indians would come from all over to try to court her. They wanted to hook up with her, and she didn't give none of them a time of day. And the story goes, now, it could be, it's probably, it could be a myth, but I think there's something to these myths.
usually, yeah.
All them, the chief and everyone was sitting around, and then I forgot what they were doing, and some gentleman appeared. And they said it was like he was walking on the air, like he was floating. He wasn't walking on the ground. And she looked at him like, this is going to be my husband. And somehow they set it off, and he asked the chief for permission. The chief gave him permission, and he says, I just want to let you know I'm not from here. I'm from the stars. And showed and taught them the star system that he was from. And that's how the Lakota Indians knew about that star system. That was amazing too. And I couldn't believe they had that
Wow.
at that mining museum.
Interesting.
Wow.
Yeah.
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 But
Interesting.
with that crazy conspiracy, I would definitely like to go into something because this is kind of strange, and it captured a lot of people's attention is the Moscow shooting. Do
Yeah.
you ladies believe that that stem is, does this war still stem from the Romanovs? Like, and what do you think about that attack? Do you think that was Russian, Ukrainian? Like, what's your thoughts on
Nah,
that? Because that was a
we got
little.
our fingers all over that, in my opinion.
You're talking about the boat?
No, she's talking about the Moscow terrorist thing at the Crocus.
But we could talk about the boats if you guys want to after that, because it's starting to seem a couple more states are starting to get bridges hit.
Well, that one, it's interesting about the boat. When you think the boat may be related to the Ukraine-Russian thing, but I'm going to tell you, they were very, very quick, when the media is very quick to blame somebody, there you can guess that person's not guilty.
Yeah.
Because look how long they take when there's, when it's a real investigation. So right. My point here on the Crocus thing is that the guys, I read the Russian sites, the right. Archangel Spetsnaz and the Wagner Group and some other stuff sometimes. And they all kind of are talking about the fact that, first of all, this is the kind of thing you wouldn't expect to be, manipulatable. Like these individuals, right. These are guys who are actually out in the field fighting in combat. And they're talking about these four dudes. There was a 19-year-old hairdresser. Okay. And one of them, although the news wanted to tell you, oh, these are Russians. They actually live in Russia. There was like one of these guys didn't even speak Russian. Okay. Yes, he was a Tajik or something, and he had a Russian passport. He'd been living in Russia recently, but recently, in other words, it looks very concerning that they had planted these people. But the thing that got my attention, these guys out, the real warriors over there, they were looking at this video of them shooting in the auditorium, and they made the comment, these guys utilize trigger control, shooting technology, basically the way they shoot trigger control, like they teach in the West. Apparently the Russians don't do it. They can see the difference. I guess it's like dance steps. I'm not a warrior. I don't, fire these weapons. So I don't know, but they were saying you could see the difference. The other thing is all of them said they were paid. They weren't there for ideologic reasons. They were paid. Where did they escape to? They all went to Ukraine. They all tried to get into Ukraine.
Just saying.
So they were Muslim. They were all Muslim. And I think there is a point that what the Russians believe is this was an attempt to fractionate Russia. If you really look, and I think, I don't know if this came out in the Tucker Carlson interview or not, but if you really look at Russia, they're actually doing what we pretend to be, the melting pot. They have, subsections of their, what used to be the Soviet Union, and they had the Soviet republics around there, and some of them were Muslim. And yes, they've had some issues once in a while, but like right now, you've got the Muslims from what's the one they're mostly from? But there are a bunch of Muslims fighting with the Russians. I mean, they're part of the Russian army. They bring their own battalions. Okay, they are fully integrated in the Russian army. You can tell the respect between both sides. It's not a matter of the religion doesn't count. It's like you're a Russian first, and then this is my religion and my thing, but we're all Russians. And you can tell that's what they believe. We don't, we say we do that, but we don't do that. Mm-hmm. And what they're trying to do, NATO and CIA moved into the western part of Ukraine after World War II, and they've never left. I mean, NATO wasn't NATO then, but the OSS became the CIA. The Nazi remnant moved in with what they called the Bandera. The Bandera was a guy that supported the Nazis in Western Ukraine, and it's been that way. So that's where the origin of the Azov came. And we've got, there's a long history here. That's what I think. I don't think, but the interesting thing about the ship is that ship, there's lots of interesting things, but one of them is, that when they take down that harbor, apparently a lot of the equipment to the war in Ukraine is hard to get there. In other words, that a lot of military shipping to Europe goes through that port, which I didn't know before. But
have you ladies heard about the two other states with their bridges being hit, Oklahoma and Arkansas?
We're in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. I didn't hear that.
I didn't either.
I seen our member Diane share that one on the wall, and then I seen from Raw's alert that another bridge in Arkansas got hit. And I'm like, wait a minute, did we go from train derailments to bridge hits? Like, what's going on here?
Well, exactly. It's not, they would have you believe that our country's falling apart because we have idiots in government, they're incompetent, and it's just, or it's natural disasters. None of that is true. This is a planned takedown. You know, you couldn't land. I always said, we're not going to be invaded by China by them landing on the beaches because we would eat them for lunch. As many people think we're kind of losing our military competence, we are still an awesome military force, and you don't want to come from a long distance and fight the American military. So how could you take down America? Well, let's see. You could vaccinate all the infrastructure of America with a deadly vaccine. But number two is you could start dismantling their infrastructure. And I remember when I was a resident in orthopedics, this would have been about 1986, I think it was, in San Jose, California. Maybe I've got the date wrong. Maybe it was later, but I thought it was when I was a resident. San Jose, California, and that area lost their electricity for 2 weeks because they took out the four guys in black, you know, face covering and black block, you know, uniforms with high powered weapons, took out a huge transformer, electrical power transformer. They showed you could do it with high powered weapons. And I remember saying to my husband then, I said, this is the beginning of a bad, that's a test run of something, and it's not good. Now we've seen it down in North Carolina, right? We've had the bridges blow up. Or I mean the bridge now, but we've had the food plants blow up. Mm-hmm. We've had train derailments, and and by the way, we had three hydroxychloroquine plants, two that made precursors, and the second biggest hydroxychloroquine producer in the world in Taiwan, all spontaneously combust within a 6 month period, two on the same day, right? One in Mexico, one in I think Indiana or Illinois. And then they keep telling us this is all natural. No, it's not natural. We're in a war, and they're attacking us through our infrastructure by just sabotaging it. And who they are, I'm not speculating at this point. I'm just saying it's not natural. And once we figure that out, then either our government is complicit or they just can't figure it out either. That's the only two things I can say. Our titular government, the people that pretend to be our government.
Okay.
And,
by the way, I'm just going to add thing, and I'll shut up. But I got to say, I don't think that Austin is alive, our Secretary of Defense. The other thing,
yeah, that was weird.
Well, I'm going to tell you. First, alive? It was weird. I don't think he's alive. Going backwards.
I'm
going to
work directly under him.
Yeah, well, that's fine. But I'm going to tell you, you work backwards. This guy doesn't look like the Austin before he went into the hospital. Secondly, you don't just disappear for 5 days as the Secretary of Defense. His staff got caught off, you know, on camera, just off the cuff when they weren't prepared. And they said, we don't know where he is. Well, you know, that hadn't happened. Then he tried to cover it up by saying, I checked myself in quietly into Walter Reed for cancer care. I was in the military. As a military doctor, I did this. I accidentally didn't alert somebody when a retired Marine general, that Lemuel Cormick Shepherd, wonderful man, checked in. I had to check him in the hospital for a minor thing. But anyway, the point is that the whole world went crazy because that raises flags on the system. When you have somebody that's a retired or an active officer, let alone the Secretary of Defense, every military hospital in the world that's ours has an automatic built-in thing. It would flag that and they'd be all over that. So there's no way that they lost him there. So then go back in time a little further. And I said this at the time. I said, you know, remember what the Russians said? Well, no, because our Russian doesn't come out in English papers. The Russians in December said they had taken out a deep military NATO base in Ukraine and that Austin was killed. They said that back in December, and nobody believed them. But now it is coming out what they did, and they did it. But it was their special, FSB, their intelligence service, I guess, had worked for 6 months to pinpoint this thing. And I can't remember the name of the town. They now give you the name of the town. I've got it, I think, on my Telegram. They've got it on the name. They give you the name of the town. And this thing was a deep, deep, deep hole bunker. And at the time, there was a meeting of 40 senior NATO military guys in that thing. And they had been, you know, working to get this together for 6 months, the Russians, and then they overwhelmed their anti, this is their big, you know, this is where they put the F-16s together that we shipped them. This is a big base, and they overwhelmed their air defenses by first sending in a bunch of drones to confuse things, and then sending in a huge amount of dummy missiles that then, so we're getting these details. And then they sent in two of these Kinshell missiles that are supersonic, and they're like the Moab on steroids. Boom. They go down deep and they tunnel and blow up. And they said they killed 40 senior officers at that point. That's what the Russians reported in December. They didn't give it with the details that I'm telling you. That's come out later, just recently. And I'm telling you, my opinion, I think Austin's dead. Now, why would the military let a, you know, if like you said, you know somebody that works in that under him? Why? But they are not going to let that out. Do you know how bad that looks? I mean, again, they are not going to let that out if it's true. So if your guy, I mean, he would be probably
a girl.
Well, guys are the East Coast term. Guys, girls. They will not tell you that's true. Even if it is, they're going to try and. That's why they stalled on not seeing him. I think for 5 days, they didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. That happened the same time. That was his first time he disappeared. When was that? It was like right after that purported NATO attack.
Right. Well, I mean, she might not tell me, but I'm still going to ask.
Yeah, you're going to ask, but you don't want her to get court-martialed.
Right. Well, I just think like her answer might be interesting, even if she can't tell me. Yeah. So that's funny. Wow. Yeah.
So would you guys think with this, the bridges being hit? Because I remember, you know, as you were talking, I go back to when Biden was saying, we got to build back better. We got to build America's infrastructure. So was that conditioning for these bridges to get hit so then they can go to the MK Ultra mind control people and they're like, yeah, we need to build our infrastructure. Look at the bridges. They're crumbling without seeing what they're seeing, you know?
I hadn't really thought about that. I mean, I think it's more of an economic attack, honestly. That's a huge travel zone, and it's a huge port, and it's right outside DC. I think it's going to have a huge economic impact. So
it's a military attack, though. I mean, come on. If they start, just watch for another deep water port. Let's see what happens in Long Beach. Remember, the Chinese tried to buy Long Beach. Mm-hmm. And I was in the Navy then, I think. And they said, well, they were going to buy Long Beach Harbor. I said, are you crazy? We have been giving away selling off, giving away our deep water ports. It's a strategic, I mean, it's a national security
China
nightmare.
Has so many of them anyway. I mean, whether they occupy them, regardless of whether or not they bought them. They occupy so many of our ports.
Right. And so now what they did, right, when they couldn't take over the port, they took over the longshoremen, essentially. They took over the running of the port, you know, kind of the behind the scenes people. So, I mean, I just have to say, this isn't just economics. This is about a concerted attack on us. And what's the point here? Chinese communists. I'm not going to say it's China because I think China is infested with a deep state just like we are. It's not the average Chinese, but the problem is, what does the Chinese deep state want with us? They want our land. They can't feed. We're one of the few countries, you know, war always comes down to calories, and we're one of the few countries that can feed ourselves. We can feed ourselves, clothe ourselves. We have oil and gas. We can heat our homes. We are completely, if the borders went shut tomorrow, please God, let that be. If the borders weren't shut tomorrow, we'd be self-sufficient. We don't need anybody's imports, but not China. They would starve. So they really want a foothold in America.
Yeah, I think there's truth in that. I definitely think that it's an attack. But I'm saying it has tremendous economic repercussions. Sure. And I mean, that's a great way to attack a country is economic warfare. So I think it has multi-layered repercussions for sure.
Yeah, and I just don't want people to think this is all about Wall Street and stocks and making money and, you know, that kind of
thing. Oh, no, I didn't mean it that way. I meant it much more in terms of like supply chain.
It's infrastructure, supply chain, war material. You know, that's why Eisenhower, having fought World War II, built the interstate system, right? Because he knew that you've got to have transportation. Well, they're coming after our transportation system very systematically.
Look at what they're doing with the airlines. I mean, the whole DEI. Yeah. I mean, that's totally to take over travel.
So what do you think about that 1,800 planes in Europe that had all of a sudden had GPS issues? What's that about?
Oh, that's crazy. I think I missed that.
Mind blowing is our two admins here, Wanda and Val, they put on a lot of good streaming shows. And one of them was a Phil McCano, and he was talking about a company, I believe, called Serco. And
Serco is a monster. Oh, nobody talks about Serco. It's a monster.
Doesn't that remind you of what's going on with these planes right now?
Serco?
Well, how they can control our planes, military planes. Serco can control
everything. And they're basically RCA, right? RCA became Serco, or rather the other way around. But yeah.
Yeah, I don't know them. Explain Serco. I missed this
one. Serco is a government contractor, but they have like, I don't remember how many hundreds of thousands of employees. They're a government contractor, and they do become RCA. I'll see if I can look up some, stats on Serco. But they control really like all communications, and definitely in the West, but. Let me see if I can find.
When I learned that, I said, holy cow. Wow.
I know. I used to talk about Serco all the time, and people would look at me like I had 10 heads. They're like, what are you talking about? But I think they're really a monster. And I think they're connected at this point, I think, very much to Maximus Inc. is another one. And I think they work very closely together. But Maximus Inc. is another like huge government contractor with ridiculous like amount of employees.
So is this Serco Technology Corporation? What's
yes.
CIRCO? Okay.
No, Serco.
Oh, Serco. Okay.
Yeah, Serco Inc.
Yeah, that one.
They're a British company. They're a British company, but they work out of but they have contracts with all over America.
Wow. And the Canadian government, it says.
Yep. Well, and that's the three, right, that they tend to have. Like Ditchley is another one of these kind of secret organizations, and they have a headquarters in the UK, the United States, and Canada. That seems to be pretty common that they work out of those three.
So it says here that 22% of their employees are veterans, and they have $1.6 billion revenue in North America.
That's it. Yep.
You guys recently had – it was funny when you just said that, Dr. Lee, because you guys recently had on the one doctor that was talking about Simone Gold's – they're coming up with that new –
Right. Gold Care.
And then she brought up the medical industrial complex. And you I was just about to say, it sounds like the military industrial complex.
Yeah. So their Serco Group, it's a British multinational defense, health, space, justice, migration, customer services, and transport company. It's headquartered in Hook Hart, England. The company operates in continental Europe, in the Middle East, Asia Pacific regions. I thought it was the East too. Yeah. Including Australia and Hong Kong and North America. It's listed on the London Stock Exchange and is the constituent of the FTSE 250 index. And the company was founded as RCA. So yeah, it did start as RCA. Services Limited in 1929, a UK-based division of the Radio Corporation of America. The company began providing services to the British War Office, right? They do a lot of, they're kind of like Leidos or, what's the other one? Unilever, all these like British, all of these wartime contractors. During the Cold War, British War Office and government departments during the Second World War, during the Cold War era, it specialized in the provision of sophisticated defense services such as sonar, early warning radar, and satellite system. The company was substantially restructuring during the 80s, reoriented itself towards broader service provisions outside of engineering. Following a management buyout, the firm adopted the name Serco Services and Company. They also supply they work with the SES in this country. In 1987, it was listed on the New York Stock, on the London Stock Exchange, and one year later, during the 1990s, Serco opted to expand its presence globally, seeking out contracts to run a diverse range of services in behalf of various governments. And then by 2013, it became one of the largest government contractors, employing approximately 50,000 people worldwide, managing over 500 contracts. And by 2022, approximately 55% of the company's revenue was being generated from overseas, with revenue in defense 32%, justice and immigration 25%, citizen services 21%, health and facilities management 13%, and transport is 9%. And then it goes on, but yeah, so it's a, it really is a monster. But I remember that because of the RCA and the British War Office connections. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting that where you said that they are located in England.
Well, they're right, they're British company.
Right, right. But what they're, yeah, what they're located right near RAF Odenham. And what you're talking about, you know, radar was really, really top secret. That's what the Nazis didn't know we had, and we did. Right. So radar and sonar were really close to the chest. If they came up with those two, then in other words, these are, you know, what's Halliburton is kind of known for going over and doing services like doing their laundry and keeping the barracks clean and doing, you know, supplying stuff. They made their money by supplying necessary items that weren't war fighting potential, but they also did the other, but I'm not saying they didn't, but it was mostly that. These guys look more like they're the dark arts of the military, that they're a private contractor. I have a feeling
they are.
That's what I'm saying, but it's like contracting, not for, you know, toiletries, but for, but bad, you know, really big time technology stuff. That's black stuff. Yeah.
And
I'll bet you if you look at,
sorry, go on. Oh, I was just going to say Maximus Inc. works with them, and they've taken a lot of their employees. I think there's a huge crossover, and they're another like really dark monster.
Yeah. I'll bet you if you find out that RAF Odenham may be more than what it appears on the surface. You know, it's like being stationed outside of Skunk Works, that kind of thing.
Right.
Or outside of Area 51.
right. Probably.
Yeah, I'll definitely send you that interview that we had a watch party on, because he kind of goes in depth, and his sister worked with Hillary, and I never knew this stuff, and I'm like, holy cow, like, I'm so thankful that Val brought that to my attention, and we watched that, because I'm like, holy cow, like, my brain's going a million different ways, and when you start talking about the GPS going down on those planes, it just brought me back to that speaking that Field gave about that company. And it's like, something fishy's going on. I mean,
right. How
many times have we seen the planes being grounded because they're having malfunction with the systems? And it's like, what's going on here?
Right. Not to mention the fact that they, by vaccinating all the pilots, We've now got allowed our private pilots to be, I mean, these guys that are flying big jumbo jets for passengers are doing so with first degree AV block, which puts you at more risk of cardiac sudden death. No question. They couldn't fly with that before. That was, they changed the FDA, I mean, the FAA standards because they damaged the pilots with their own mandatory vaccine. Let's just think that one out. It's part of this infrastructure takedown, I think.
It is.
And they didn't just do it to the pilots. They did it to the maintenance crews, too. So they're probably short of maintenance crews. I'm just speculating.
Well, they don't want us flying because they want to trap us. I mean, they want to literally geofence us. So we're all trapped in a digital society. They definitely want to eradicate travel and make it so that it's only for the elite. Whether they do it through the infrastructure takedown, whether they do it through, you know, destroying the competency of the pilots and the airlines, or whether they do it through psychological warfare, convincing us that somehow it's bad for the environment, and or whether they do it financially through, you know, this stupid carbon credit system that they want to execute.
Right. Well, but when you have 1,800 roughly planes that lose their GPS almost all at once, there's something more to it than just wanting to keep us geofenced. I mean, this is that sounds like it's another test.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't, you know, I definitely think it's a test, but I think it's also they literally want us to be like trapped. They don't want us to have any kind of mobility. They want us literally trapped.
You know, when Dr. Lee, he said, you know, they can't come to our waters and try to bring the heat to us because, you know, our army is very strong. And plus, I mean, every state has hunters. I know Wisconsin is like number one or I think sixth most powerful army with all the hunters and registered gun owners. And that's just Wisconsin. There's other states that it's a lot bigger. Iowa, for instance. Now, as you were talking, I was thinking, like, Muhammad Ali, I don't know if you guys watched him fight, but how he went into the ring, well, Mike Tyson would go in the ring. He's looking to knock you out between the first and third round. He's bringing power blows. And Muhammad Ali, he was a guy that would jab you. He would weaken you. He would get you tired out. And with all these different hits, it kind of seems like if that's their method of attack here on the lands.
Yeah, I think that's a good analogy. Yeah. And because, you know, it takes a long time when a train, when that bridge is not going to get built within a couple of years. Right. So it takes a long time to recover from these kind of infrastructure attacks, even the train derailments. I mean, look how long it takes to even clean them up, let alone rebuild the track, rebuild the thing. We're slowly squeezing ourselves down where we can't move goods and services to prosecute any kind of defense on the coasts, for example.
Right.
You know, I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but if, you know, Courtney and I, you know, have had guests on and we talk about predictive programming and what Hollywood tells us about the future. And did you ever see that show, The Man in the High Castle?
Okay,
so what's the theme there? The theme there is that there are alternative timelines, that timelines have been the timeline. Reality separated, essentially. You got two different timelines. In one timeline, we won the war, but these other people are living in the timeline where we, the Allies lost World War II, which is kind of looking more like our timeline every day. And that the United States was split into three parts. And the Japanese in that case took over the West Coast, the European Nazis took over the East Coast, and there was kind of a no man's land of rugged individuals, thank God for us, in the Midwest, you know, that are still hanging out. But that's kind of what we may be looking at, you know? I mean, think about it. The Chinese might not get around to the other side of the country, but would Gavin Newsom mount a defense if the Chinese just said, we want to buy your forest. We want to buy your, you know, we want to bail you out. You're in such debt. We're going to bail you out. But here's the deal. You know, I don't know. I'm just wildly speculating here, but I'm just saying I don't think this is going to happen because I don't think that the government in DC is real. I mean, did you see the picture that just dropped? By the way, I hadn't seen this before. And it was a news guy, and he was up in the news booth at the time of the inauguration. And he's saying, this is really dystopic. There's nobody here. He said, you know, Trump and W, they had between, you know, 750,000 to a million at their inaugurations. And there's about 100 people here, and they're National Guard.
Well, Dr. Lee, you're right. The most important thing, why did all those politicians allegedly at his inauguration look like they were at a funeral? Like, what's up? Obama looks sad. Bernie looks sad sitting on that chair. I mean, your guy's in. You guys can, like, go ahead and do whatever you want, like cockroaches with the light off. Why is everybody looking sad?
Because they were about to get arrested, I think, personally. I think the minute that they participated in that, it was high treason. I think we're in the law of war manual. That's just me. I think that, you know, I had Derek Johnson on one time and he's exactly right. Mm-hmm. I didn't see as much as he did, but there was some of that stuff I watched in that inauguration. And I said, besides the CGI stuff and the fact that they had two tapings and it went to Europe before it even theoretically happened. Yeah. Besides all that, just looking at the military, they weren't right. It's like, who's that guy standing for the photo op on the Capitol steps between the vice president and spouse and the president's spouse? It's like, you know, that uniform doesn't belong to any service that I could figure out. one little stripe. They're, I mean, they don't put a low level, you know, like an ensign or a second lieutenant on there. I don't know what's going on, but it said whatever it is, it's not right. And all those military turning their back on Biden when the cavalcade or when the car drove out. I mean, that just wouldn't happen. I mean, that's just not normal. So those guys must have known he wasn't really the president. I personally think we are in devolution, law of war manual. And also, I'm going to say, I was out there. My friend Patrick Gunnels from Threadfest, from Reading Epic Threads, he was out there for CPAC in January of 2023. And he said, this town of D.C., we've walked down here. The reflection pool has been just let to dry up and smelly. It's not like they were cleaning it. It's like it's just like a dead swamp. This place looks like a city abandoned. There's junk in front of the Federal Reserve that looks to be closed. Nothing's happening downtown. So then we had somebody. So I wanted to go there, but I ended up going in August to speak at the in front of the Capitol for AFLDS again. So we were down there and we walked all over, and there was, you know, normally there are people 24 hours a day coming in and out of the Capitol building. When I used to live in DC, I mean, in and out of the Capitol building, it's just night and day busy. There was nobody. It was nothing. The Treasury was looking like it was mostly shut down. Looked like there was one light bulb that when it got dark, there was one office lit up in the back of the back in the third floor or something. It was just, and there were all these tubes coming out of it. It was under construction. There, the Federal Reserve, the big brass sign is down. I mean, that's multi-ton, and they had all the, there was like backhoes and everything tearing up the front yard. I mean, it wasn't right. Now they had refilled the, it didn't look like it was deserted. Now it looked like it was in reconstruction. So you had the reflecting pool had been refilled, and the buildings were all being, they were all wrapped like you were doing reconstruction. And one of the Uber driver that took me to the, I asked him, took me to the airport. He said, well, they say that they're bringing all the buildings back to the colonial look, like they're going to be uniform colonial look. Mm. Well, that's interesting, but it's telling you it's not right. There was a big sign, interesting, on the backside of the Treasury building. There was a huge big sign that said, in bright, like, the New America. That's interesting. Didn't seem to go to anything.
Wait, there was a sign that said New America?
The New America. Three words, great big letters, like shiny brass-like letters, said on the backside. It wasn't attached to anything. It was like, what's that? I had a doctor friend with me. She can attest to it. I mean, I'm not crazy. And I took a picture of it, but that was one of the ones that went down in my whole phone catastrophe. But wow. Yeah, it's crazy. I don't know what it is, but we are not seeing. The point I'm making is what we see as pictures coming out to us little people away from D.C. has right. never been what really happened in D.C. When I used to live there, I talked to my mother out in Iowa, who was still alive at that time, about what we saw about, you know, at that time, President Clinton in public right. there. And it was just horrible. And yet they never heard any of it outside the Beltway. So right. we are seeing a show that we can't understand completely. But it's not. But what we're seeing, and you know, the obvious pictures that are coming down out now showing that the office that he claims to be in the Oval Office is not the Oval Office. It's mm-hmm. like Castle Rock or some studio. The doorknobs are wrong. You look at the doorknob. That's not something you would change. You can say, oh, he doesn't have the same pictures and he doesn't have to change the color of the carpet or whatever. But you don't change the doorknob. Come on. You know, and it's just so many things that show that it's not right. I don't know. So we can, I mean, people can decide what they think, but I personally think we're in a take back situation where the parasites have been driven out, and now it's what do we do next kind of thing.
Well, that would
I agree.
Be great. That would be great.
It would be
I
great.
I mean, I'm not as convinced, but I would yeah. that would be awesome. Yeah.
So yeah, Dr. Lee and Courtney, I know we're hitting that hour mark. And I see someone has their hand raised, so if we can get a couple questions, if you have time, sure. I'd like to respect you sure. guys' time. But I would like to ask both of you a question on two different things that you both were involved with. Courtney, I'll start off with you. Courtney, I want to say Courtney so much.
It's Courtney. It is Courtney. It's just spelled Courtney. Yeah, gotcha. It is Courtney.
I seen your video when you were before, I believe, Senate. and they asked you to help them draw up a legislation or something like that, or a bill. Could you go into that a little bit? Because that's awesome. And maybe any listeners that's listening to this, you could do the same thing in your community. That was really awesome.
I highly recommend that you do. So the SEC had proposed a rule to implement something called NACS, which is a natural asset company. And this was this is a very long road agenda. This is something that's been in the work for decades. However, they thought they would quietly sneak it through over the holidays, you know, kind of like our Federal Reserve Act. They thought it would be a lovely Christmas present for people. And I think they were hoping that nobody would notice and they would be able to, you know, quietly pass this. So what it was the Intrinsic Exchange Group, who is really an organization that seems to have no other purpose other than to try and get this proposed rule on the SEC path. But they are backed by, they're partnered with the New York Stock Exchange. So the New York Stock Exchange, I'm going to try and give you the Cliff Notes version here, but they're partnered with the New York Stock Exchange. So the New York Stock Exchange was double dipping on this particular agenda, but they were partnered with them and they were backed by the Rockefeller Foundation, Abadir Ventures, which is like they're a venture firm, but they mostly specialize in medical technology. And then IBD and IBD Labs, as well as Entertaining Ventures. I couldn't find anything on, Entertaining Ideas. And they're a venture firm, but I couldn't really find any information on them, so I can't speak to them. Some of the sub-partners were people like Nestle and the World Wildlife Organization, which, of course, the brainchild of Julian Huxley, who was one of the founders of UNESCO, the one who famously coined the term transhumanism in 1957, although I'm now hearing Max Moore wants to take credit for that one. But he was also a member of the British Eugenics Society. And so it was, those were some of the sub-partners. And what was going on was that they were proposing this rule that the SEC would list this new category of companies on the New York Stock Exchange. So it was very, very concerning. They did end up withdrawing it. Unfortunately, people submitted lots of comments. I was trying to sound the alarm because I honestly thought they were just going to pass it and push it through. But my hope was that if enough people submitted comments, then there would be a lawsuit after that. And anybody who submitted comments would have legal standing in the lawsuit. So my hope was that you would have a very large class action suit. But since they were, so what happens is you propose this rule and then there's usually a window and typically it's around 45 days, sometimes even as long as 90 days. But again, they were trying to pass this through very quietly, I think very covertly over the holidays, and they gave only a 21-day period for comments. And this was unprecedented. And it was Marlo Oakes, I think, who was one of the first to really sound the alarm on this. And he is the state treasurer for Utah. And he got together 22 other state treasurers to propose a opposition to this, and they submitted a comment opposing it. Then 25 state attorney generals made their case opposing it, and theirs was really a legal case, which is why I thought that they would move forward with the lawsuit. So all this to say, I had done a show because I felt like I needed to sound the alarm that, you know, I wanted people to start submitting comments. I ended up going on about 15 shows talking about this. And one of my senators actually found out they've done the show. They were talking about something in a meeting, and I happened to have friends who were there. It was in East Tennessee. I'm in Middle Tennessee, but they were in East Tennessee. And he had in passing said, you know, has anybody heard about this NACS? And they were the only people who raised their hands. So they were the only one who knew. And they went and spoke to him. They said, our friend just did a radio broadcast about this. It's very scary. It's very concerning. And he said, could I be put in touch with her? And so he called me and he requested that I do a presentation for the, at that time it was going to be, you know, the Senate committee, but it turned out to be the subcommittee, the agricultural committee. So I really tailored it to them and talked about things like the conservation easements, which are now several bills that they're renaming, rebranding as they typically do. And they're calling it agricultural easements. They're the same thing though. And that really needs to be stopped. But I know I've rambled for a while and I could go on for quite a bit. It's kind of a complex subject. So if anybody wants more information, I've done several shows and we've done it on the Dangerous Dames. I've talked about it, but that's what I was talking about. And I was proposing several, bills that I thought should be drafted in order to put a stop to this. And they're in the works right now. They're mostly trying to, veto some of the bills that have been put forth. This seems to be how the game of politics is played. So we're so busy playing defense and trying to push against a lot of the ones that have been passed. And a lot of the ones that they're either trying to push through or have already gone through are coming from Governor Lee, who's carrying really just a UN agenda. There's just no other way for me to put it. It's so obvious because I know the agenda. I've read the plans. I know exactly like the white paper documents that this is coming from, and he's clearly carrying it. So we've got these various politicians who are carrying for him. And that's what I was trying to stress on them, that locally we need to push back against this and not be falling lockstep with the UN agenda. So,
and Courtney, if you can send me that that recording, because I'd like to have a watch party on here, because
sure,
a lot of us may be scared to go do these things, but she brought all the facts there and it was just simply amazing. It was powerful, and I'm sure that's going to inspire someone to do what she does, because there's a lot of researchers out there and we often share this research amongst each other. But I mean, you can sit in front of a bunch of senators that have no clue and really open their eyes. And that's exactly what she did. So I want to say, I tip my hat to you on that one. That was really awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, I think I overwhelmed them. It was supposed to be 10 minutes. I think I went for like 20 something and I completely lost my notes. So I had to do it all from memory because I was so nervous. I shook my phone and the notes just disappeared.
Wow. You did that by memory. That's good.
So, yeah, but I will send it. And hopefully if it inspires anybody who is way more polished than I am, then awesome, because we need more people to step up. And they were really gracious. They actually were very, very receptive. Most of them were not familiar with it at all. So I think they were grateful. And a lot of them were very curious. They came up to me afterwards asking questions. I had a very different response when I went individually to speak on the school choice issue. Then I got a lot of pushback and they claimed I was not allowed back, although that was, they can't do that. There were no grounds for that. But yeah, that was a little bit more of a contentious kind of an environment.
Well, thank you for that.
She also came on. I have a show called The Iowa Corner, and it's trying to get out word about, all the things that affect Iowans. And there's nothing bigger on the target than land acquisition, land grab, whether it's virtual or actual. And so she came on and talked about that. I think it's a big thing that everybody that owns land needs to understand too.
Yep. Yeah.
Agree.
You either own property or you become the property that is owned.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
She definitely threw some red pills out in that hearing, I tell you, because there was some stuff that I was like, wow, I did not know that. And Dr. Lee, before we go into Q&A, if any members, there's three hands raised right now. I'd like to bring up something that was really awesome, the Declaration of Military Accountability. And I see that you signed on to that as well. Could you explain that in depth to the members? Because we saw
Brad Miller.
I think that was really awesome. If you can touch on that, please. And thank you, Rob Green, for signing that in your service.
Well, thank you. I mean, I was honored to be asked. Rob Green wrote the book Defending the Constitution Behind Enemy Lines. Well, his enemy lines are he's a commander in the United States Navy. He's a surface warfare officer. And he was, he's one of the people that stood up and said, no more. I'm not recommending that I'm not going to force my troops to have it, my people to have it. And so for that, he's still in the Navy, which is surprising. So my friends that are in medicine, like Sam Sigaloff, he was a major in the Army. He got riffed out because for the same thing, he wouldn't give the vaccine. He wouldn't recommend it because he said, I can't give informed choice. I'm not doing this. And it's not right. It's wrong from the military. In fact, I've been looking around. I cannot find any active duty flag officer that stood up for the troops at all. So anyway, so Rob Green, that's one of the things. He and Brad Miller is, as you heard, he was a lieutenant colonel, West Point graduate. And this guy wouldn't take it. And again, for the same reason, he said, this is not right. I'm not violating my oath of office and my oath to the Constitution. And so I'm not going to tell my people to have it. If they want to get it, I'm not going to stand in their way, but I'm certainly not going to tell them it's mandatory in this command. And so he was relieved of command and he was at 19 and a half years. He was discharged from the Army. This guy is just one of the most eloquent, smart, officers you'll ever run across. I mean, West Point graduate. And so this is the kind of people that they did not have any flag rank support, but they stood up and they said, like Brad Miller said, I had a choice of not honoring my oath or going against the entire military establishment at this point to honor the oath to the Constitution. And that's what he chose to do. So anyway, what happened was, though, that after they had done this, no consequences seemed to be coming to the people that dishonored their oath and did these bad things. And, just to be clear, I was in the military during the time that they mandated the anthrax vaccine. That was Desert Storm. And it was so horrendous what happened and what that was about that they passed a law into the Federal Registry. You can find it. I mean, we know we have the chapter and verse on this that says you cannot experiment on the troops. In other words, you cannot force military to take any experimental drugs. And yet that's exactly what they did. And they claimed, the way they got away with it, they claimed, well, it wasn't really a mandate. We can't really mandate it. Well, really? sure sounded like a mandate, because they basically, it's simple. You go to the flag officers and you say, you force your people to get their people vaccinated, or you go. And these guys chose their job over their moral and ethical duty. So that's what happened. And so when they got these guys that were all involved, and they were talking to each other and they were working to try and get legal cases going and whatever, and that didn't work out, even though they supplied all the legal data to people that will remain unnamed right now. But they said we couldn't get anybody to do anything. Commander Green wrote the book, and then they came out with this Declaration of Military Accountability, because they said at some point we are going to we're not going to forget this. We're not just going to let this go. We believe that there should be accountability for these people who did this to the military. Those senior officers who didn't stand up, for example. So, more to follow, but that's why they filed it. And actually, Commander Green sent a letter, I believe, to one of the admirals way above him, and reported his admiral for what he considered treasonous action by doing this. I can't remember the exact word, but he reported him and thought that he should be charged for mutiny. That's exactly what these are gutsy guys that did this, but they realize what's going on here, that there's a corrupt senior. And I asked these guys, by the way, I said, do you guys, I always said wars are not won because some brilliant guy at the top sitting in DC does it. It's because these mid-grade field officers know how to prosecute the war and know how to lead troops. And so I asked him, I said, did you guys talk about this? I mean, what, so many people just like passively, sheepishly took this stuff and didn't stand up for their troops. And he said, we talked, there were groups of us that talked about this a lot. So, some of them took the vaccine, but they didn't, they tried not to get in the line where they had to force it on anybody else, kind of thing. I mean, they just tried to slink into the dark for a while and not, but a bunch of them, they were talking privately in their wardrooms about this whole thing, and they knew it was wrong. They knew it was, criminal behavior, essentially violated military discipline and good order and the law.
Right.
So that's what it was about. And I don't have all the details of how they're proceeding with this, but that's the first step, is to say, we're putting you on notice that we're not forgetting.
Yeah.
And when it's coming, we'll be back to testify when it's time in court martial, I think.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Brad had like, I don't know what it was, like 8 months, or I mean, he was almost to
6 months, 19 and a half. Yeah, 19 and a half years. He missed his, so he did not, after all that time in West Point, which isn't easy, and all that time in the Army. He was a brigade commander.
Yep.
You know, or a battalion commander.
Battalion,
You don't get to be a battalion commander because you're a dirt bomb, you're dirt bag. You're a competent, good officer to do that. So
he
let him go rather than think, twice about this. And the only reason I can explain that is that people were being pressured. Anybody that raised any doubt was being pressured. You know, I had the most senior guy that was active duty I could find was a Navy captain, and he was a Navy captain, medical corps. He was a flight surgeon. He spoke out against this, and he ended up having to get out. Now, he was able to retire because he had over 20 years in. I think he might have had over 30 years in, but he was the equivalent of a colonel in the Army. So he was a four-stripe Navy captain, and he stood up for his troops. He didn't take it, and he tried to stop it, but they came after him, and they just said, "It's time for you to retire." So he retired.
Well, that's awesome.
But he's
Oh, I was going to say, and I got my little dust up with the medical board was over a comment. This is the comment that got me a hit piece on NPR all to myself.
Oh,
and, big written hit piece. My kids said, "Mom, the only damage, Devin Nunez's lawyer wanted to represent me in that kind of suit against your names being used wrong." Anyway, and I said, he said, "Well, didn't you have any damage from it?" I said, "The only thing that happened to me is that my boy said, 'Damn, Mom, you got a whole hit piece off to yourself.'" It's like I was more of a more up in their eyes, So yeah. But what I said, this big controversial thing I said that got this also got me investigated by the medical board of the state of Iowa. And here's what I said. I said, this is before much of the military had been vaccinated. It was just rolling out. This was early on. And I said, "It is a national security nightmare to vaccinate the entire security infrastructure of America. That we're vaccinating all of our military, our border patrol, our trauma surgeons, our truck drivers, people that actually keep this country running, especially in a time of conflict, for example. And you're vaccinating them with a vaccine whose blueprint we got from communist China. If you believe the story, anyway, that's how that came from Wuhan. And the only person whose name I can identify on that paper was the bat lady of Wuhan virology lab. So you're going to take that blueprint, make it vaccine, and vaccinate all your military. Does anybody see the problem with this?" That's basically what I said in an AFLDS meeting. Think about that. And to be investigated by your medical board for saying that. Is that not, if you don't think we are being attacked and our military was attacked by this, everybody thinks they recognize bombs and planes and guns as weapons of war. They just don't recognize shots as weapons of war, but they are. This is classic this is bioweapons warfare 505, very stealth, very clever.
Wasn't it once said that we'll take America down without even firing a bullet?
Yeah.
There you go.
That's the color revolution that we're under, and that's definitely well underway as well. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Dr. Mm-hmm. Lee and Courtney, for going into that question and explaining it to the members, because there's a lot that we could be doing, and we learn so much from other things. And all those guys that signed that letter, if you do speak to them again, Dr. Lee, let them know that we thank them for that.
We'll do. Yeah.
We do realize that they took their oath serious, unlike some of the fakes out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And with that, we can go into Q&A. And I just want to say, everyone that's on here and anyone that's watching this podcast, check out the Dangerous Dames. Dr. Lee Barrett is the medical rebel on Rumble, and Courtney Turner, you can find her on Rumble at C-U or sorry, C Courtney, Turner. Yep. And if anyone has a question for Courtney Turner and Dr. Lee, if you press the middle button, we can see your hand raise and we will call you in order. So if you have any medical health questions for Dr. Lee with the parasites, or if you have any rabbit hole questions for Courtney, you can see all the books behind her. She's well researched. And Marie, you are unmuted. If you have a question, unmute your mic and go ahead. Marie, if you have a question.
Sorry. Thanks so much for taking my question. I understand that something dramatic's going to happen in October. Does anybody, that may be a rabbit hole question. Does anybody have any insight on that? Thank you.
Well, there's usually an October surprise, but as to what that's going to be this year being an election year, I have no idea.
Yeah. I'd be surprised. I know James Grunvig thinks it's going to happen after Easter. So I don't think anybody knows all this date stuff. Who knows? But something's afoot. I think we all agree something big's coming.
Yeah.
Whatever that is.
We know that they never let a crisis go to waste, right? That was part of Saul Alinsky's rules for radicals. And they also never, miss an opportunity to create a crisis. So there's that.
And it's not just about coinciding, although we talked about it the other day on the Dangerous Dames about the occult symbolism of April 8th and all the things that happened then that this is a magic number for the dark occultist kind of thing. But in addition to that, there's an 88-year drought cycle, and we're just coming into it. And that's what happened just after the pandemic of 1918, too. So I think what they do is they coordinate their bioweapons attack, for lack of a better, their attacks in our multifocal attacks. I said, when this whole thing kind of started, I kind of looked around and I said, you know what's going to happen? Look at what's happening to us now. You know, it was because of the dry year last year. I said, in 1918, they had a fake pandemic followed by an economic crisis, a drought, and then war. I'll bet you that's the gameplay here, too. And so I would just say that this is a whatever's going to happen. They've gamed this from a long time ago. This is nothing's in their book. It's all been played out. Now, hopefully the good guys have counters that are also played out, but we're too little to be at that level of knowledge. So I have no clue. What's going to go on. I just say people, I think we're winning. I think they're, that's why they're so shrill, but I just say stand by for heavy rolls because it's going to get maybe a little hairy here before we get out of this.
So.
And I'm sure the good guys have a counter. I'll just jump on what Dr. Lee said. So I wouldn't have no fear, but I'll definitely keep an awareness of your areas, your community, people that don't look right. You know what your neighborhood looks like. You know your neighbors. If you see something fishy, like 107 says, a wise man sees trouble and he gets out the way. But keep your awareness, because I think in the months to come, we probably need to keep our awareness. And anyone that's throwing out dates, like Dr. Lee said, be careful of those people, because nobody knows. And the good guys aren't going to leak that up.
You know, your awareness point in Shelby County, I think it was Shelby County, Iowa, a friend of mine from Team America said, hey, we just had a group of Chinese caught climbing an electrical tower. I think it was an electrical tower. Yeah. And they reported it to the sheriff. The sheriff's actually apparently taken it seriously, and they are organizing kind of committees of security to kind of make sure that they're watching things. So, yeah, our infrastructure is under attack. So be particularly vigilant about that, I would say.
Absolutely. And Valerie, one of our admins on here, she does have a question. Go ahead, Valerie.
Yes, thank you for being here, Dr. Lee. I heard you talking about the kind of parasites that can get into the spinal column and the importance of keeping small children, you know, maybe not sleeping them with animals and that kind of thing. And I'm curious to know how you get rid of those kind of parasites, because I had an interesting experience where I had to have a myelogram done. And after the myelogram, I really, my energy level, everything picked up, and I was really dreading doing it to begin with. So it was a big surprise to me. So if you could speak on that, I'd appreciate it. And again, thanks for being here.
Yeah. Well, I think that came up in the context that I was talking about when I, this whole thing about parasites has been hidden from us purposely. I'm absolutely sure. And that's a longer talk. But the point is, I was talking about multiple sclerosis, which is when you lose your coordination, you have different weird neurologic symptoms that come and go. Sometimes it's a little hard to early diagnose it, but one of the ways we diagnose it is we get an MRI and we look at if they have plaques in the brain, meaning color changes areas in the brain and spinal cord. It's a diagnostic of MS, but we never knew what it was caused by. And then recently a pathologist did an autopsy series of 10 dead MS patients, and 100% of them had parasites in the area of the brain and spinal cord, like we see in these MRIs, right? So what's going on here? Well, it turns out one of the things when I was in medical school, they said was that you're more likely to get multiple sclerosis later in life if you have a lap dog before the age of 5. And I just remembered that little factoid because I thought it was so weird. I mean, why would that matter if we think it's an autoimmune disease? Well, it's not an autoimmune disease. It's a parasite disease. And how does this make sense? You know, when you see the world correctly, all these little data points fit into this nice picture. And the point is that when you're 4 or 3 or 2 years old, you don't have a very strong blood-brain barrier. You can't screen out toxins in the bloodstream from getting into your brain always. And so if you're being licked by dogs or cats that have, you know, toxoplasmosis maybe, or some of these were nematodes. So these were actually worm-like little things that they found in the brains of MS patients. So whatever it is, the parasite can travel. The tiny little parasite can either lay eggs or travel across the blood-brain barrier. And all it takes is one to get in there. And now it's in contact with everything. And then it would be able to spread. So it does make sense. Now, the question is I don't know that we know. I mean, we have several drugs that we use that people are comfortable with. I'm comfortable with ivermectin, fenbendazole, nitazoxanide are my three go-to drugs, but there are others. I know for a fact that ivermectin and fenbendazole do get across the blood-brain barrier. How much and how successful it is, I don't know, but we know that they treat cancer with it. And there are things you can do like adding DMSO to get it to go further. You know, that helps it spread better across membranes. So we don't have the answer, but I'm going to tell you that everything that cancer hates, parasites hate. And so they found, like in glioblastoma of the brain, that a strict keto diet where you just didn't eat any carbs, and those tumors never grew. The minute you start eating carbs again, they start growing. You'll find out that parasites will give you sweet cravings, and they loved you to eat parasites. One of the things they found out in the brain is that in toxoplasmosis, which the CDC admits 40 million Americans have, by the way, in the brain. The CDC, when were they going to tell us this? They said 40 million men, women, and children in America have toxoplasmosis and in the brain, and that it can change your behavior. Okay, they know this in basic science, that toxoplasmosis can change your behavior. All around the world, except in America, they're doing studies showing that schizophrenia has a much higher rate of testing positive for parasites. The parasites getting in your brain is not benign, like they would have you believe. So what they basically are not without symptoms is what I mean. So what basically I think we have to realize is, yes, when you're having, I don't tell people not to have pets. I mean, I had pets when I was little, but we all should have been treated regularly for parasite protocols. We should have been all treated like we used to treat the farm kids with parasite medicine monthly. And if you'd done that from the time they were children on up, you wouldn't have to worry this, but our cancer rate would probably go to almost zero. Okay, this is the point. They don't want you to treat your parasites. They don't want you to know about this. There's a reason. I think this is a great way for limiting lifespan. And while we're at it, we're going to make big buck on treating it for cancer. This is my own, that's my conspiracy theory, but I think it's a conspiracy fact. I think that it doesn't make sense what they're doing. And they're hiding the fact that they're doing big studies on cancer using these parasite drugs. So I don't know if that answered your question, but I think you can get into the brain. You know, now there are parasites that we knew that got in the brain, like pork tapeworm down below, like in South America and Mexico, Central America. And the problem is when you treat them, sometimes the patient will die from the treatment because they've got so many visible on MRI and CT parasites in the brain that when you start killing them, you create so much swelling that the brain swells and kills the patient. So that's a risk. But most of us, that's not what the problem is. We have just toxoplasmosis is not that. And, you know, I don't think that's the issue. The issue is you don't want to have parasites in you. And once you start treating yourself, you never stop. This is a lifetime war against parasites that you have ongoing. I've been treating my own now for over a year and a half probably. And I'm down to where I do it twice a month. I'm still not to once a month because if I do go that long, I start having sweet cravings, night sweats, and, you know, I'll have kind of a sniffly nose the next time I treat myself because I kill so many dead parasites. So I guess I was really laden with them. I mean, I think I really was, but I feel great now. I think I've got them beaten back at least, you know, the most of the war is fought.
Yeah. I've read several of, Dr. Hulda Clark's books and some others when I worked in the health food industry. So I've been at it for a while too. And it's a lifelong process.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do think this is where the question is. I do think there's a role for actual pharmaceutical agents, not just the wormwood and the black walnut and stuff like that. Not that that doesn't work, but again, I don't know how much we know about what that will do. Will it cross the blood-brain barrier? And I also don't know what if we're dealing with some artificial parasites on top of that. So, in fact, interestingly, that if you look at the non-clotting side effects of the vaccine, they are almost identical to the side effects of being or the symptoms of when you first come down with Chagas disease, which is a parasite, Trypanosoma cruzi. So almost identical, same symptoms, same proportion of people that don't get symptoms. And that's kind of interesting because that's one of those things that would be in the vaccine and nobody'd ever know it. And they couldn't, and again, we know these things can get into vaccines accidentally because you can't heat treat biologics. You know, when we're giving somebody a biologic based vaccine, you can't sterilize it like you would sterilizing your tomato juice that you're canning, right? Because it would kill them. But parasite eggs might not even, they might supply, they can, they're like cockroaches. They'll survive the Armageddon. I mean, they live forever, but it's really hard to get rid of the eggs. And so maybe we're getting dosed with that egg, the Trypanosoma cruzi egg. In favor of that is they show in the 1992 Olympic Games opening, when they do that creepy opening and they show the blue balls with the spikes that look like what they claim is COVID. Well, it's not, but that's what the PSYOP made it look like, this blue spiky ball. Well, they also show this weird, like brown pillow that's like a semi or a half circle, like a moon shaped thing. And they're walking in with it. Well, that looks like Trypanosoma cruzi under the microscope. It's stylized, but that's what I think it was. If that answers you.
Answer your question, Val?
Yes, sir, and yes, ma'am. Thank you so much. Mm.
We have two more questions. I do want to respect your time. Are you guys able for two more?
Sure.
Sure.
All right, Laura, you're up, and then Wanda, you're after Laura.
Hey, Dr. Lee, thanks for being here. Really quick question. Complex regional pain syndrome diagnosis, it spread to my organs, all my limbs, even my hair hurts some days. Take low dose naltrexone, 4 milligrams, and CBD oil, THC balance 1:1. Would you comment on any of that? Any other suggestions? Anything? I'd appreciate it.
Well, I mean, that sounds like a reasonable plan, but here's the thing I would say. Besides the things that we're learning about a ketamine reset, for example, I don't know if you've done that, but where they actually just...
Yes, ma'am, I have.
Okay, so you know about that. Okay. Then I'm going to just say that no matter what your medical problem, because we've been lied to about this pervasive issue of parasites, I tell everybody, I said, you know, three things that you need to do before you, you know, give up on this. And that is, and don't give up, don't ever give up. But one is detoxify yourself. I use chlorine dioxide. You know, I have a protocol on my thing. Yep. And get up, you know, if I were something like this, I'd make sure I got up to like 10, 15 drops a day, slowly work up to that. So you're really cleaning yourself out. Good balanced nutritional supplementation. You can't just take a few pills. Unfortunately, you got to drink something that gives you the 90 essential nutrients. So you're not missing anything. Cause if you're missing something, you can't heal your nerves. Like B12, you got to take under the tongue, for example, but everything else, you got to swallow and you got to get it. There are 90 things that we have to take in, whereas, you know, cows don't need as many because they produce vitamin C in their body, for example. And then the last thing is parasite protocol. I would treat parasites. Who knows? I mean, parasites cause all sorts of stuff and we just are not paying attention. So could they cause pain? Absolutely. They could cause pain. So before I ran around with, I saw a bunch of neurologists, I would do those things and then see where you are. And make sure you got good sleep too. I mean, that's always important in pain. But you know, I know for myself, parasites do not let you sleep well. Mm-hmm. So that's part of that too.
Yeah, I've been doing the parasite thing.
And parasites, CDS, remember, parasites have to be cycled. Oil. Yeah. Okay.
And yeah, remember, I'm doing the fenbendazole, but I have capsules and they're 500 milligrams. Is that okay? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm doing the cycle thing and making sure I take my probiotics right, so that my gut health is good.
And I always tell people, if you don't see bowel, if you don't see changes in your bowel when you're like within a few days of taking the meds, you go several cycles and you don't see anything like normal. You have totally normal bowel habits after they do that. Maybe go to a different medication. You know, try a medication for a couple months. If you don't really see a lot of bowel changes, you might need something. And by bowel, it doesn't mean seeing worms in your stool. It means just maybe darker stools, black flecks in your stools, copious, you know, having an episode of copious soft stool, you just clean yourself out so you lose a waist size. That kind of thing is what you expect to see when you're hitting the target. And if you're not seeing that, might change medicine.
I was on Mimosa Pudica, and that stopped working. So that's why I changed from taking the Mimosa Pudica for parasites. So yeah, thanks for that. That's something I'll definitely look for. I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
No problem.
Thanks for everyone listening.
All right. And Wanda would be our last question. And like I said, I really appreciate you guys joining us and I can't wait to bring you back on so we can go into Calendar Gate.
Which nobody in the Midwest knows about. I'm just telling
right.
you. Or Tradwives. We had this joke. The two of us had this joke about this. What are you talking about? I felt like such an old fart when she's talking about this stuff. I said, what are you talking about? And then she told me, and I said, I'm going to do a sample survey of my neighbors. And so far, and people around me in Iowa, I said, I haven't found anybody that knows anything about Tradwives or Calendar Gate, but that's just hilarious. That's a joke. Go ahead.
The funny thing about it, after I seen that show and I start paying attention, I start seeing that a little bit and I'm like, wow, I think Corey may be onto something.
Yeah, but it's kind of, I think it's a big city, you know, east and west coast phenomenon. We in flyover city, flyover right. country. Don't think about it.
It's a conservative ink thing. It's a big con conservative ink. I mean, people who follow like, you know, the mainstream alternative media, then that's what it is, really. But
okay,
right.
Is it my turn?
You can go ahead. Oh, there you go. Wow.
So, what's your last question here?
Well, here you go, Dr. Lee. Hi, thank you for being here. Appreciate you so much. I'm a veteran. My husband's a veteran. So, thank you for your service. And so here's my question. So I have a torn rotator cuff, and I also have a torn meniscus, which the rotator cuff is my main concern right now. How long can I put off surgery?
Well, that's a tough one because that's one where you kind of have to see the x-rays, see the MRI, and know. I mean, the problem is if not all rotator cuffs, propagate. In other words, not all tears propagate and become a problem. And there's some other things you can consider doing. For example, we're doing autologous stem cells and things like that for small tears, not for big tears. And so it depends on where the tear is and which direction it is. And that's one of those things you really need to discuss with the orthopedic surgeon because, and there's some rehabs things that you can do short of surgery, but if it's actually a through and through tear and it starts to tear bigger and bigger, and then some, you can turn a small problem by putting it off. You turn a small problem into a big problem. So that's my general approach.
Apparently it's not a minute tear. It's a big tear. And they said something about bone spurs up underneath the cap and having to go in there. And I talked to the doctor yesterday. So I opted out of the surgery for at least 90 days and had a steroid shot put in my shoulder to help with the pain. This is something mm-hmm. that's been going on. But if you know anything about the VA, it took me 6 months to get an MRI.
So, oh, God. Yeah, I know. It's a mess. Yeah. So you're going through the VA for this.
Oh, yeah. So it took me 6 months to get the MRI. And then it took me another 2 months to get in to see the surgeon after they got the results back. And so, you know, we're getting ready to go into summer and, you know, and I have to have my knee done too, because it's not, you know, it's not a good situation either, but I'm just trying to, you know, balance everything out because I mean, this is like, you know, the healing process and everything we're looking at, you know, 5-6 months between the knee and the shoulder. So I was just kind of, you know, trying to balance everything out.
Yeah, that's really hard to know. I mean, it depends. You don't want to lose range of motion and you don't want to have it tear and suddenly it's not repairable. You know, then it doesn't get a good result when it gets repaired as easily. You know, if you have to, so I, you know, personally, I'm not really, when it's torn, it's not probably going to heal itself because you don't have enough room in there. You're making it worse every time you move it, essentially. But you got to move it because you don't want to get stiff. I'm not sure I'd put that one off very long. I mean, you might be okay 90 days, but I wouldn't put it off any longer than that,
well,
personally.
I don't have a choice now since I took the steroid shot.
I mean, that's one that you really got to talk to your orthopedic surgeon and have him go over with you what he found and what your options are. We don't always think of the questions you would ask. You know, we try and tell you what we think is going on and why we would do what we would do and what your other options are. But, you know, if we don't think that the other option is something we would do, we don't always discuss that with you as well as we should. I get that. And so I would make sure your concerns are met. You just need to talk to him. Make sure get somebody to. And if he doesn't have the time to talk to you, he's probably not going to be the guy you want to have do your surgery. On the other hand, some of the best surgeons I know have known in my life have been some of the worst bedside manners. So it's kind of hard. That's a hard issue. So, yeah.
I want my
arms to work. You know, I can gimp around a little bit on a knee. And one thing you can do with a knee, get on a life cycle and start building up your muscles. Muscles make a huge difference on knee pain. So good, a recumbent life cycle, you cycle 30 minutes a day and you get your knee built up. That can make a big difference where you might not even need that surgery, but your shoulder, I think you're going to end up doing it. That's just from what I hear. Not official orthopedic medical advice, but that's, you know, if it were mine, I wouldn't let it go too long.
Okay. Thank you so much for that.
Well, thanks. Sorry, Courtney. This didn't mean to.
Great. Yeah. Yeah. Shoulders are tough. They're super complicated, joint.
Yeah. I mean, I used to do those scopes all the time, but you know, the other thing is I'll tell you what I'm doing now. I have a clinic I'm associated with in Omaha. And one of the things I'm telling you, even in if there's cartilage left in a knee, I have had patients where I take bone out of your own bone marrow out of you, and not plasma enriched platelets, not the circulating stuff, but your actual bone marrow stem cells. They're the very best stem cells you can get, and they're live. We know they're live, and we know that they haven't been damaged in processing, and they haven't been contaminated in processing and everything, because they're coming out of you right then, and put them into the knee. Like, we'll take it out of one side, put it in the other knee. I'm not kidding you. That really works. I've looked at it, and I've gone in with a knee scoped a knee after doing that 6 months. I've never seen cartilage build like that.
Wow.
Now, it's not a product they can sell you. And so they don't want you to kind of know about that, but it's really, and I didn't really completely do it to my own knee, but when I had my meniscus repair on my left knee, it kept clicking, clicking, clicking. It just wasn't completely healing. So I asked my friend who's a general surgeon, I said, listen, I can take my own bone marrow cells out, but I can't put them in my knee. I can't get at the right angle. I'm not left-handed. And he said, are you crazy? I said, probably, but let's do it. We did that. And I'm not kidding you. Within a week or two, the clicking was gone and my knee's been doing great ever since. So I think it's a really promising future technology here. It's a technology we have now. And it's cheaper than buying stem cells that they're selling you that's from some other source that you have to pay a lot of money for, because you own these. They're yours. Don't have to pay for them.
Coming to a VA near you soon.
Yeah. I actually applied to work at the VA one time down in Omaha, but never even got a letter back from them. Kind of funny, but I thought that'd be a cool retirement job, just part-time, but.
Yeah, they said, not this conspiracy theorist. She's going to awaken too many of our patients. Courtney, Dr. Lee, it's been a blast. Hopefully next time, Courtney, we have a lot of members that are watching the Dangerous Danes, and they have questions for Courtney, but there's a lot of health issues in our world, to where I can see why Dr. Lee got a lot of questions tonight. I really appreciate the time you guys gave us, and I can't wait to have you on again. Blessings to both of you. And tomorrow, we usually have a Sunday watch party here. So after that watch party, we'll go into your hearing with the Senate. And thank you so much for all that you ladies do, because I learn something new every day. And like I said, thank you for the time you gave us tonight.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate your channel. Appreciate what you're doing to get the word out about chlorine dioxide, which could save so many people.
Yeah.
Most definitely. And if you guys ever wanted to go live on your chats or your group, your guys' personal groups, I'll be more than happy to help you guys learn how to do that as well. So
that'd be great.
Okay. Yeah.
You ladies have my number, so just reach
out. All righty.
Out.
Thank you so much. That's really good offer.
Thank you.
All right,
you.
Guys.
Have a good night.
Night.
Great. Good night.